Welcome to Front Page Jerusalem, a weekly news digest covering events in Israel. It's relevant and accurate information you need to know, direct from the Holy Land. You're listening to Front Page Jerusalem.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Front Page Jerusalem, the voice of Israel to the world, brought to you by Christian Friends of Israel in the city of the great king, Jerusalem. I'm Earl Cox.
I'm Ben Kinchlow.
And I'm Kevin Howard in Jerusalem.
The nation of Israel makes regular global headlines when any conflicts arises in the area. This past year, however, has also seen major headlines with the U.S. and other nations moving their embassies to Jerusalem, as well as the recent announcement by U.S. President Donald Trump to recognize the Golan Heights as belonging to Israel.
Well, that's true, Earl. And while these headlines persist, any discussion concerning the historical Jewish Temple Mount generates the most controversy of all. Although the Temple Mount in Jerusalem's Old City has been the location of the two previous Jewish temples of Solomon and Herod, currently the location is wrapped in a multitude of rules, agreements, and disagreements spanning decades.
In an effort to peel back the many layers of information and disinformation concerning current situations involving the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, Kevin Howard recently spoke with John Innocent, the Christian Relations Director at Cry for Zion, who is working daily to keep up with the very latest developments concerning this ancient Jewish temple location. We'll bring you that enlightening interview in just a moment, but first let's go to the CFI Jerusalem News Desk, where David Milburn has the recent headlines from Israel. David?
Thanks, Earl. Wireless vehicle charging technology developed by an Israeli-based company, Electrion Wireless, has been selected by the Swedish Transport Administration for the construction of the world's first dynamic electric road system. The public-private initiative based on Electrion's technology, built by Smart Road Gotland, will be the first in the world to inductively charge electric trucks and buses whilst they are in motion. The publicly traded company is a global leader in dynamic wireless power transfer technology, installing its unique copper coil technology underneath the road surface, making it invisible to road users and enabling a steady electricity flow by supplying power even as vehicles drive. Now, before we return to Earl, here's today's This Page in History.
April 24, 2004, Estée Lauder, founder of a cosmetics firm bearing her name, died in her Manhattan home of cardiopulmonary failure. Lauder was born Josephine Esther Mincer in Queens, New York in 1906. She was the daughter of Hungarian Jewish immigrants. She married and remarried Joseph Lauder. The Lauder family changed their surname to Lauder in the 1930s. Eventually, when she launched her perfume empire with her husband, she added an accent mark to make her name sound French and began pronouncing it the way her father pronounced it in his Hungarian accent. Like most of her eight siblings, she worked at the family's hardware store, exposed to entrepreneurship, and picked up what it took to be a successful retailer. When Estée grew older, she agreed to help her uncle, a chemist, with his business. His company sold beauty products such as creams, lotions, rouge, and fragrances. After graduating from high school, she focused on her uncle's business after being fascinated watching him create his products. She was the only woman on Time magazine's 1998 list of the 20 most influential business geniuses of the 20th century and was also a recipient of the Presidential Medal of Freedom during her lifetime.
Welcome back, everybody. The Temple Mount, located in Jerusalem's Old City, is the historical location of the Jewish temples found in the Bible. And Kevin Howard recently spoke with John Innerson to find out more about the challenges surrounding that location today.
Thanks, Earl. We're here today with John Innerson. He's the Christian Relations Director for Cry for Zion, and he's joining us here in our Jerusalem studios. John, thanks for joining us on the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
We recently had a brother-in-law of yours, Jerome Kidar, here on Front Page Jerusalem. How has the family dynamic strengthened the trajectory of Cry for Zion and your goals and purposes?
Well, I think that it makes a big difference to, at least for me in my personal life, to have family that's Jewish and to think about those dynamics, and me as a Christian to study the scriptures and see what the relationship is between Jews and Gentiles, as well as in the body of Christ, and what it means biblically for the future vision that God has for redemption in the world. That it's meant a lot to me, and it keeps those issues always front and center in my life, and that's what I work with as a Christian relations director for an organization that works with Jewish issues. So it's definitely impacted me.
John, give us an update on the current status of attempting to gain access to the Temple Mount by people that want to express their faith, whatever it is.
Yes, so what we work with is to change the status quo on the Temple Mount. The status quo is something that's been going on since Israel received the Temple Mount in a defensive war in 1967, and they decided to leave the custodianship with the Muslim Waqf, primarily led by the Jordanians, while Israel would maintain overall security. And it was supposed to be a status quo, an unchanging situation from when Israel conquered the Old City and liberated the Old City and reunified Jerusalem up until today. But the truth of the matter is that a lot of things have changed on the Temple Mount. There is no real status quo. It's a bit of a myth. It's a slowly changing dynamic situation on the Temple Mount. And part of it was, of this supposed status quo, was that Muslims would have full religious rights on the Temple Mount, but Jews, Christians, and tourists would self-discriminate against themselves not to pray, and that the government of Israel would uphold this situation on the Temple Mount. The funny thing about that is it goes against the laws of Israel. It goes against the freedom of religion and general anti-discriminatory law in the state of Israel. It's not supposed to be that way. It's an exception made for just the Temple Mount because of a political situation. And what that means is Jewish people who would like to say a prayer when they go up on the Temple Mount are not allowed to. If they say a prayer out loud, they will be arrested and may not be allowed to return. They might be put on a blacklist by the police and not be allowed to return to the Temple Mount for some period of time. That situation became increasingly bad. It deteriorated a lot 2014, 2015. Then we started bringing the issue to the front in the Christian world, as well as a lot of great Jewish organizations in Israel. Since then, I think lately the situation has changed slowly over time. There's good things that are happening. One thing that's happened is that the police, who used to be quite brisk and did not behave well towards Jews or Christians on the Temple Mount, they discriminated in favor of Muslims quite harshly. They have, I believe, been changed out to a new police unit in charge of it, new personnel in charge on the Temple Mount, who have a cordial relationship with people. They try to do their jobs, but they are not ideologically bent, so to speak. So that's great news. There's a cordial relationship there now that wasn't there before. Another thing that's changed that I felt was really big was that the Minister of Public Security in December of last year, he was at a conference where he was speaking about the situation on the Temple Mount. And he said that we have not done a good job of exercising our sovereignty on the Temple Mount. And I'm going to instruct the police to do their jobs so that we implement our sovereignty on the Temple Mount. And he said, I'm going to review the policies about discrimination against Jews on the Temple Mount that we've had in place to see if they're actually really still necessary. So that was beginning of December 2018. And that's been really significant for me because that's what our organization has been so pushing for, is the issue of sovereignty on the Temple Mount, which Israel has. They're just not exercising it. The law is on Israel's side. But for fear of intimidation and violence, they don't exercise it. And then secondly, that Jews would be allowed to pray, that their freedom of prayer would be respected. And you can see it's such a spiritual issue because as soon as, I mean, it's amazing to see, there's literally video you can see on YouTube where if a Jew prays, a policeman will come and put his hand over his mouth and muzzle him from praying on the Temple Mount. And it shows you there's a real spiritual, such a spiritual and ultimately in the physical, illogical battle going on the Temple Mount that I think shows the significance of this issue.
So how does the inclusion of Palestinian members to the Jordanian Walk change the dynamic of the day-to-day operations of Temple Mount Access?
Well, the fact that Palestinians are being included by the Jordanian Waqf into the organization of the Waqf, the Muslim Trust for Holy Places, is not good. There used to be a power struggle between the Palestinians and the Jordanians for this position, but in this case, lately, the Jordanians are using the Palestinians to and putting them in place inside the Waqf organization for the Temple Mount in order to fight Israel, really politically, and even through violence, which does occur, most recently by the Golden Gate, or the Gate of Mercy facing the east, which is the gate itself is a hollow structure. And the Muslims on the Temple Mount and the Waqf and all the activists involved have been trying to create another de facto prayer structure inside that hollow hallway of the gate, in essence, by praying in there, even though it's been closed, by breaking the law, breaking the status quo, trying to force their way into creating yet another mosque on the Temple Mount in another area, even though Israel and the Supreme Court has declared it illegal. I see it as a bad thing, and I think it's also a sign that the Jordanians are somewhat nervous that they are losing the issue, or that they will lose the issue of the Temple Mount. So they're taking active steps to essentially fight a political battle to gain more ground on the Temple Mount.
John, how volatile of an environment is there at the Mercy Gate? And how do you anticipate the Israeli authorities, how will they interact with the Muslims who insist on praying and worshiping there?
I think the issue at the Golden Gate and the Gate of Mercy on the east, it really reveals the position of the Israeli authorities and the Israeli government. That is the most significant thing, because the Minister of Public Security, he has set out what he believes should be the case in December for that Israel needs to implement its sovereignty stronger, that it's been slipping on the Temple Mount in an embarrassing way, and that the policy should be reviewed. But the way that Muslim activists have been involved at the Gate of Mercy and the Israeli response, they are pushing the Israeli authorities to see what will be Israel's response. And Israel's response has been so much one of containment, of trying to not provoke the situation. It's showing they're always pushing, and you know, people who are against the police will always do this. They will push the police to see where is the line, and they'll go right up to it, see how far they can push the line, push the legal boundary of the police further back, and it shows the weakness or the strength of the police. Where is it at? Even though the guy who's responsible for the security has wanted to take a stronger tack, ultimately, the prime minister and the government is over his head and limits what Israel can do. I think we really need to pray for the Israeli government right now that it will no longer be a policy of appeasement, but that sovereignty will be implemented. However, underneath the surface, some things have changed. I mean, they arrested members of the Waqf this time around in the unrests, which Muslims used as another excuse to continue the riots and the violence, but the police does not want to permit unrest on the Temple Mount. The harassment of Jews and Christians that used to come from the Waqf on the Temple Mount has been cut way down by the police. Thank God that's happened. But the Gate of Mercy issue, it's also spiritual, and I think we need to pray for the Jewish people, because the unrest at the Gate of Mercy, where Muslims tried to create another mosque, happened right after some Jewish religious authorities said we shouldn't go up to the mount, within a week. So I think it's a spiritual effect. Some, you know, significant religious rabbis and leaders in Israel say we shouldn't ascend to the Temple Mount. And within a week, the Muslims try to claim another mosque and territory on the Temple Mount. And you can see the effect. So there is an internal debate in among the Jewish people about the issue of the Temple Mount, of course. That's not something that me as a Christian has any say in more than to pray for the Jewish people that they make the right decisions. But you can tell the consequences of these decisions that they do make.
As Christians praying for the nation of Israel and her people, let's also remember the scriptures found in Psalm 122. with the instruction to pray for the peace of Jerusalem. But right now, we need to take a quick break so that you can hear about an amazing outreach project of Christian Friends of Israel that's making a tangible difference in the lives of some very special people in Israel today.
Amalek is a single mother living in Jerusalem. As a Jewish immigrant, the burden of a new life in a new country with new language are often too much for some to handle. Like many Ethiopian mothers in Israel, Amalek is facing the hardship of raising her children alone after her husband left her and returned to Ethiopia. Normally, the older children of the family help make ends meet by finding work, but two of Amalek's sons are now away from home, serving as soldiers in Israel Defense Forces. Hi, I'm Marcia Brunson, coordinator for CFI Jerusalem's project, Hope for the Future. Just like Amalek, many women in Israel are unable to survive with their small income alone. Hope for the Future is able to alleviate excess pressure by helping with groceries, paying utility bills, and assisting with the younger children's school tuition fees. I have literally seen people weep with gratitude because they saw no way out of their situation but God. That's when Hope for the Future comes alongside to help. We can't take care of everything, but when it involves the lives of widows or young children, we must respond. Together, we are making a real difference in Israel, one family at a time.
Christian Friends of Israel's project, Hope for the Future. Just one more way we're making a difference in Israel, one life at a time. For more information, go to frontpagejerusalem.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to our continuing discussion between Front Page Jerusalem's Kevin Howard and John Innerson of Cry for Zion.
What's your view on the U.S. recognition, then, of the Golan Heights belonging to Israel?
Yeah, so this is the issue of the embassy move to Jerusalem and the recognition of the Golan Heights by the United States is something that I believe goes together. And it's all a push, a larger push by, I believe, the Trump administration to do as many positive things as they can for Israel and then present the peace deal that they would like to make in the region and say, we have given all these positive things to Israel, now it's your time to give concessions. And one of those things is we know we have Trump's speech on record where he says, I moved the embassy to Jerusalem, and because Israel got something that great, now they're going to have to make painful concessions. It's the Palestinians' turn to get something nice. So he said that on record, and the thing that really gave it away to me was his speech at the embassy move. He gives a great speech about Jerusalem and the Jewish people's connection and everything. And all of a sudden, he puts this insert in about the Temple Mount for a couple of minutes that's like straight out of the pages of the State Department. Somebody's given to him and said, you have to read this about the Temple Mount. And it says, you know, but the Temple Mount. The Temple Mount status quo shall not change. We're not messing anything with the Temple Mount. The Temple Mount's a big exception. I'm not talking about the Temple Mount. That's an issue that Israel can't have. And now he's adding another bonus to this, and I think ultimately helping Bibi in the elections by recognizing Golan, because he knows that Bibi would like to go along with Trump to implement some sort of peace deal. And giving the Golan Heights could help Bibi keep him in power. It's unfortunate, and I pray for other right-wing figures in Israel to arise that would make it impossible for Netanyahu to pursue a disastrous peace deal in Israel.
John, is there a relationship between your core issues and the preparations being made to resume a third temple sacrifice practice by the Sanhedrin, with the anticipation that the third temple might be built on Temple Mount?
Yeah, so this is an issue we deal with a lot. And me as a Christian relations director speaking and educating to Christians is the issue of the Temple Mount. Immediately it comes into theology regarding the temple. It is the mountain of God's house, of the temple. Our goal in Cry for Zion is limited. We speak about sovereignty on the Temple Mount and freedom of prayer for the Jewish people. Those are our goals. But in order to speak about that, we have to address the issue of theology with the temple and Christian theology. The Temple Mount movements in Israel have created a lot of stir in the Christian world by having a dedication of their mobile altar. They present a practice sacrifice. I think a lot of Christians thought that it was a real sacrifice, that they actually offered an animal on this altar. They didn't. That's illegal according to God's law. You can only do that on the Temple Mount at the temple. But they presented how ready they were and did a practice run of how it would be conducted. And people honestly freaked out. And the reason is, I think that the temple service and the issue of the temple in Christian theology is the last stand of replacement theology. Even people who agree that the Jewish people haven't been replaced by the church, God's covenant with them hasn't been replaced, the land belongs to the Jewish people, and have attempted to shift away from unbiblical replacement theology, they would still say, well, Jesus canceled the temple service. Jesus canceled the sacrifices and so on. That's based on a lot of misunderstandings, I think. The temple and its sacrifices have never been, in the Bible, the way to eternal salvation. They've never been in conflict with the gospel. They have illustrated the gospel in a wonderful way, but the apostles, Jesus, they all loved the temple. We see Apostle Paul bringing sacrifices into the book of Acts long after he's written his famous epistles and been missionizing among the Gentiles. So they never saw that conflict, and I think it's based on old replacement theology interpretation paradigms on some of the Bible that's still there, some of the epistles, Hebrews, and so on. But I think Christians really need to see that there's no conflict between the temple and what the Sanhedrin is doing and so on, and the atoning death of Jesus. And even great theologians today and great Christian leaders seem to feel that they are mortal enemies and that the temple was destroyed and that was God's hand to show that this is no longer the way to salvation. But Hebrews makes it clear that was never the path to salvation. So I see rather divine harmony in the Bible between the temple system and the Gospels and everything rather than this contrast and duality.
Finally, John, what's the message on your heart related to what God might be bringing in the forefront in this time we're in?
The Temple Mount, God is bringing it to the forefront. And it's His holy mountain. It's where He's placed His name and reputation forever. It's where the gospel story ends, if it, beginning in the Garden of Eden and finishing in Jerusalem. It's the trajectory to where the Messiah will come and rule and reign. It's the future hope, the biblical hope. And God is now lifting it to the forefront, which I find very exciting. Before I got involved with this, I thought the Temple Mount was for nuts, fruits, and flakes, and people who wanted to blow up the Dome of the Rock, or crazies, really. But then you start looking into what God is bringing to the forefront and saying, look at the scriptures, take another look at the Bible and see what I say about Zion, about my holy hill, about the Temple Mount, and my passion for redeeming humanity and doing it out from this mountain. And people have such a passivity. They're so passive. It's like, this is prophecy, it's written in stone, God will take care of it. It's interesting to know that's what will happen. But God always works through people. And people can either decide to get a part of that story, or like Mordecai tells Esther, if you don't step up, God will find salvation for the Jewish people through somebody else, but you and your house will be destroyed. God will make His plan come to pass, but He's going to do it through people. Has He ever done it except using people? He chooses to do it that way. And it's our choice whether we get on board and get involved or we don't.
Mr. John Enerson, Christian Relations Director for Cry for Zion. You can find them at cryforzion.com. Thank you for being our guest today on Front Page Jerusalem.
Thank you so much for having me on the show, and I'm so glad that Christians are really taking interest in this issue, and I believe that's God's will and what He's doing. So thank you guys so much.
Well, thanks, Kevin, for that illuminating and encouraging interview concerning the latest developments involving the ancient Jewish Temple Mount location in Jerusalem. Well, our time's almost up for this week, but up next, we'll hear from David Nekrutman with this week's Bible on the Go. Before that, however, let's take another visit to the CFIJ News Desk, where David Milburn brings us the very latest. David?
Thanks, Ben. U.S. Envoy for Middle East Negotiations, Jason Greenblatt, released a map of Israel, including the Golan Heights. The new map, which includes the heights as part of Israel, was added to the U.S. international map system. U.S. President Donald Trump recognized Israeli sovereignty over the Golan Heights in March. A few days later, Trump signed an official document with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at his side. Now, before we return to Earl and Ben, here's David Necropman with this week's Bible on the Go.
Growing up in an Orthodox Jewish household and seeing my friends go out on Friday evening in their cars to the movies or on Saturday morning to the baseball games, I often felt jealous that they were able to be free to do what they wanted, and here I am restricted not to go ahead and do some of this Sabbath stuff. I looked at it as a list of do's and don'ts, but it took a person of a great stature who impacted my life greatly, Rabbi Dr. Gerald Meister, and he said a very interesting line to me. You have to understand the why of the Sabbath before the how of the Sabbath. For him, the why of the Sabbath is clearly indicated in the Bible, in the Ten Commandments, in fact. It is about God the Creator and God the Redeemer. And we need a 25-hour period where we can go ahead and focus totally on that concept of who is God in this world and what has He done, not only collectively as a nation, but personally as well in our own lives. We are commanded to go ahead and work 6 days and really unleash our creative power. That is what really separates us from the animal kingdom. But creative power needs a rest, a release from external obligations, and to focus on internal relationships with God, family, and the community. Sabbath is not just about a cessation of work, but a powerful force to imitate the holiness of God. It is a time from where we go from a pause of earning our livelihoods to a reflection of yearning for God. It is a day not to pursue mastery, but to celebrate mystery. This is David Necropman with Bible on the Go.
Thanks, David. Well, that's our show for today. We hope that you've enjoyed the program, everybody, and thanks for joining us this week. And please don't forget to support this incredible station because it supports Israel.
And before we go, let me invite you to join us again right here next week as we bring you all the latest from Israel and the Middle East.
So for now, on behalf of the entire staff of Front Page Jerusalem, I'm Earl Cox, reminding you that because God loves Israel, I do too.
You've been listening to Front Page Jerusalem. For more information, go to frontpagejerusalem.com. Front Page Jerusalem is brought to you by Christian Friends of Israel Jerusalem, making a difference in Israel one life at a time. Front Page Jerusalem is a production of Level E Media Incorporated.